Hey there, my beautiful friends. Welcome back to Spiritual Conversation, honest and joyful explorations of ideas to help us align with our true spiritual purpose, to integrate our material and spiritual reality, and to live our best lives. I am your host and your friend, Jacqueline Claire, spiritual realism artist, illustrator, Enneagram guide, and mermaid of the airwaves, here to take your hand and go on some deep dives together. For the record, what I mean by that, even though it's like super catchy, mermaid of the airwaves, I actually love mermaids as a symbol, and I really relate to them in the terms of being of a dual nature. Right? They are mer and they are maid, and not fully belonging to either world, which is how I personally feel in this life. And if you sort of feel like that, then I guess we are of the same make, you know, where I feel that I can move in both worlds to some degree, but that I am not of either in particular. And sometimes that causes some inner conflict, but it also is rich with gifts, right? When you dive into the ocean, you can bring back pearls, which is how I see these conversations and these explorations. And also I find great like recharge by going deep. You know, that like on some level, that is my true home, to go deep into spirituality, to the, you know, conscious or subconscious, you know, and then come up to the surface and share and to listen. You know, so much of where my ideas come from are just from listening to other people. And then there's a synthesis that goes on in my mind. And then I may come back with something that I want to share that I think has been helpful to me and may be helpful to others. And also, anyone who follows Jordan Peterson knows that one reason why he for years has been such an advocate of uncensored speech, the legal right to uncensored speech, is that humans process our own understanding through speaking. You know, there's a processing that comes from listening, from reflection, and then we actually like workshop our own ideas by speaking, which is why that's so important, being able to talk and, you know, see faces and discourse and all that stuff. So, hello, welcome to the podcast. As some of you know, I recently attended the Freedom Fest conference in South Dakota. I was part of the conference. I had some spiritual realism fine art there. I was the featured artist at Freedom Fest, first time ever. And I wanted to share a little bit of just what I've processed since then. It was awesome. It was a great conference. Again, I had never been there before, and they had also never officially had an art exhibit before. And it's not one of those conferences for me anywhere where I came away with like one specific takeaway. It was more the joy of being with a lot of people from around the world who value the principles of, well, basically what this country, the United States, was founded on, right? Like federalism, that balance of like unity and sovereignty. So just being around those kinds of people and hearing different panels and talks and stuff, but letting that percolate. And as a person who always tries to come back to the spiritual principle and also to elevate sort of what may be topical, current events based, material to a spiritual dimension. And with everything going on in the world, something that's really been hitting home for me is freedom, the idea of freedom, and what that means from a spiritual perspective. Because we know that you can be very free in a material sense, say have great financial resources, have very little, you know, pressures on your time, have no family or whatever, and feel very enslaved by your own mind, by addictions, by unhealthy attachments, by consumerism and materialism and always needing the next thing. And you can also be literally enslaved. You know, you can be Baha'u'llah, prophet founder of the Baha'i faith, in the Sea of Chal, in the Black Pit, which was a dungeon, probably the worst place like ever. And you can be spiritually free and happy. That's actually where Baha'u'llah received his revelation, was in this most, you know, filthy, vermin-filled place with murderers and criminals and no light and, you know, talk about being unhygienic. So this paradox, you could say, of freedom, or this mystery of freedom. And in the example I gave of someone who has the outer trappings of freedom but is very enslaved, those enslavements are actually chosen. And I think we all do that to a greater or lesser degree. We enslave ourselves with, you know, ego and that sort of thing, and also with our false beliefs. And, you know, there's been so much discourse going on right now in the last 17 months since the pandemic hit, and all the sort of back and forth and controversies and concerns and death and controversy. I keep going back to that. That's like really what stands out to me. And then moving into like from the masks to the vaccines, to the vaccine passports or credentials or whatever, and how you see people from all over the world rising up against that, and not the vaccine, but like the passport being tracked. You know, I've seen like in Italy, I think it was, people who had the passports like burning them because they don't believe that that sort of thing should be tracked, right? That it's a bad direction. And I have been thinking a lot about like Nuremberg and times when true atrocities have been committed by little people. You know, Hitler was only able to accomplish what he did because so many people followed his instructions, right? And even if his, I'm being hypothetical here, but let's say his instructions were 10 steps and you had 10 people responsible for just one step, and they go to work that day and they're like, well, I'm only doing this one thing. But this one thing is part of a very destructive greater plan. And I've been thinking about that and how, you know, we all know, I think, I don't think this is like historical, you know, newsflash for you, you know, atom bomb drop here, but that so many people, when they were brought to justice for playing that 1% or that 10%, said something to the effect of, I was just doing my job. I was just following instructions. And that's a pretty good excuse, right? I mean, it's pathetic, but it's also very relatable. How many times have we just done what was expedient for us, right? Expedient meaning I'm not going to get fired. And that is a giving away of one's freedom. That is to say, this is not my responsibility, is to hand over one's sense of autonomy, right? And you know, there's much more innocent examples of this. I'm sharing this, as I usually do, in sort of a dramatic fashion so you can percolate. You know, maybe I'll inspire you, maybe I'll irritate you, but it'll get you thinking about situations in your own life. So to say that that's not my job, or this is my job, or I'm just following instructions, you are taking on enslavement, right? My hands are tied, right? Or my hand is forced. And I think humans, on some level, I think we're attracted to that, right? We're slippery creatures, and there's something secure about, okay, fine, just tie my hands, you know? I love to A Wrinkle in Time. I've never seen the movie, but the book, you know, when they finally go to the planet where the main character's father is imprisoned, and there's this very regimented life on this planet. They're, you know, almost like ants or something, you know, or bees. They're kind of think with one mind, but it isn't creative or full of life in any degree. And they discover that the whole planet is run by this one brain, this it. And they confront the it. And it's very seductive. They feel this temptation to give themselves over to the it brain so that they don't ever have to call on their own selves anymore, you know? And the main character, she starts to fight it with hate. She's like, I hate you. I want to kill you. I'm not. And as she hates, she feels it taking over. She feels it winning. And she realizes that her only defense is love. And she can't really love it, but she loves her brother. And she just focuses on that love. And that helps her not get taken in. So that brings me to what I wanted to say, this idea of love, of holy love, of salvation, and of what? Free will. This sacred bond and covenant that we have with our maker. And so when someone, you know, I was just doing my job, right, this taking on of this enslavement mentality is to try to shirk responsibility, right? But the fact of the matter is, even to shirk responsibility, that is to use your free will to make that choice. So in the shirking of responsibility, you are still responsible for that choice. And you are still responsible, say, for playing your part in the atrocities that were Nazi Germany or any other atrocity that's happened in the world, past or present. Because we have free will, which is why I think, you know, that's one dimension to these stories of, like, Baha'u'llah in prison, in literal confinement, in literal slavery, or, you know, amazing stories of American slaves who fought to keep their families together, or any, you know, enlightened person that's been imprisoned and has survived to tell the tale. Like, they use their free will. They are physically enslaved, but they use their free will to connect with God. So this balance, right, of responsibility that we can never escape. We never, ever escape how we choose to use our free will. Do we use it to defend the oppressed? Or do we use it to take the road that is expedient and say, that's not my job? Or, sorry, but this is my job. I don't like it, but it's my job. You know? So that's one dimension of freedom, you know, where I've been trying to slice into it. And you know, freedom is more than just, you know, celebrating with fireworks. It's How are you choosing to show up every day? How are you using your free will? Is it to close your eyes or to open your eyes? I've been mentioning Breakwell, Thomas Breakwell, in these videos recently. Thomas Breakwell was an early convert to the Baha'i faith in the early 19-teens. And he was just a beautiful soul. And he fell in love with the Baha'i faith. He was in Europe, but he was American. He was visiting, I think. And he had a really good job at some sort of factory, textile or something, in the United States. But they used child labor. And his conscience was troubled by this. But not until he converted to the Baha'i faith and spent time in the presence of Abdul Baha, who was the center of the Baha'i faith at that time, he confessed this and said, you know, I have a great job, but we use child labor. And Abdul Baha didn't tell him, oh, you know, you need to, you know, talk to the board about this, and you need to, like, you know, I don't know, whatever way he could have found a balance of, like, staying in the bad situation, but appeasing his conscience, Abdul Baha right out told him, you need to quit. Which to me means you need to sever all ties with injustice. Now, that's a whole other conversation if we want to explore how maybe Thomas Breakwell could have done good by being some sort of advocate for the rights of children. And that's a totally valid discussion we could have. But that is what Abdul Baha said to him at that time. And, you know, as a Baha'i, I think, you know, Abdul Baha was, his wisdom was supreme. And it's just an interesting thing because Thomas Breakwell did that, and he suffered greatly. He died in abject poverty. And I think many of us in our consumer culture would be tempted to, well, I'm going to keep taking the paycheck, but I'll see what I can do. And it's like, there's no compromise with evil, right? That's kind of the moral of that story. And though he died a pauper, he died a spiritual king, you know? Another thing I wanted to share from Freedom Fest, and I shared this with my email list, be sure to hop on that thing if you're not on it. There's links in the description because that's always Patreon first, email list second, and then my other content. So I really like gathering friends on those places, you know? So if you resonate, please jump on so we can stay connected. The reclamation of words. My wonderful friend Sienna Mae Heath, who is the star of this documentary called Real Unity, had a screening. And her whole film is an exploration of what is real unity, which gives space for diversity of opinion, but where we come together in common goals. But someone in the audience was triggered by this film, by the idea of unity, because to this person, unity had become synonymous with sameness, with conformity. And it's very, very sad that such beautiful words as unity have become denigrated in people's minds. And I think freedom is one of those words, right? Like, do you hear freedom and think like redneck or something? Or liberty, you know, some selfish person who just wants, you know, liberty. Or a word like justice, you might think of like social justice warriors and people who are triggered by everything right, left, and center, you know. So I'm trying to give a wide range of possibilities, and, you know, judgment is universal, and it's no good, you know. We have to keep all our prejudices and biases in check, you know? So this reclamation of words, reclaiming words, one, because language is important and words are beautiful, and I'm not going to stop using the words unity or freedom or justice or anything like that, but also because what we need more than anything is to be able to have eye-to-eye discussions, to be able to consult, to be able to bring together different perspectives. And when there are barriers, like how we interpret words, right? I say we need unity, and you're thinking, I'm saying we need to like all cut our hair to have the same hairstyle and wear the same clothes and be automatons. Like, no wonder you're scared. No wonder you're like, no, that's not what we need. And then I'm thinking unity is like this wonderful coming together of like differences and similarities and us like creatively solving problems. And I'm like, why is this person so against this idea? This person must be really twisted, right? Like that's how humans have these misunderstandings. So to understand that when you say one word, it might mean something different to you than what it means to someone else. And so that's just another layer of complexity. But reclaiming the words, defining what we mean by these things, saying, I'm sorry, why do you not like this idea? And come get down to the heart of the matter. Because in my experience, when we do that, when we get to the heart of the matter, not political slogans, not, you know, parroting whatever, you know, someone is saying on the news. I'm sure you guys have seen those clips where there's like a gazillion news networks that all use the same. It's something like something about a threat to our democracy. It's like a line, right? So when we get past those advertising slogans, those propaganda slogans, those trendy catchphrases, we all want to live with dignity. And we want other people to live with dignity. I truly believe that. I think we prioritize ourselves and our, you know, our family. But I think nobody wants other people to suffer unless there's something that has truly been corrupted in them. And I think that is a very, very, very small portion of the population of the world. None of us want to live on a trash heap, right? We all want a world that is healthy, like environmentally. We all want to breathe clean air. We all want our progeny, the future generations, to have something to be proud of. And some people work very hard financially for that, right? And then other people are like, how dare you do that? You should be thinking about the earth, you know? But at the end, we want the same thing. If we could just talk about that, if we could just have the respect for other people that that's what's going on, like give each other grace and then have the courage to discuss and have consultation and conversations, we can really make a difference solving the world's problems. So my friends, that's my wrap up for Freedom Fest. Thanks for taking this deep dive with me. I think it was a little all over the place, but I'd love to know what ideas this has sparked in you and what ideas you resonated with and what maybe you disagree with. I would love to hear it. You know, if I can at all, you know, practice what I'm talking about, I would love it. So let's talk. You can, if you're listening on Anchor, you can send a voice memo. If you're on YouTube, you can leave a comment. In both places in the description, you find my website. You can send me an email through the contact page. So it's all groovy. Of course, in the descriptions, you will also find links to my online art gallery if you would like to bring some spiritual realism, beauty, and inspiration into your life to have some abiding presence to remind you of your spiritual nature and to even remind you of these conversations that we have. I also am doing Enneagram coaching and guidance, and that is now finally on my website. I've been doing it for months, but now it's on my website. If you want to book a little one-on-one time with me to work through some challenges in your life or to learn more about your unique Enneagram type, you can do sessions for as little as 15 minutes or up to an hour, and I'd love to spend some time with you. So check that out. And also Patreon. I love my patrons so much. You enable me to create this sort of content and to make my art, which is my life's calling. And so you are doing such an amazing, beautiful thing for me. And that opens up at just $3 a month right now. So it's really, really awesome. All right, my friends, don't forget to leave your thoughts. I really like to hear what you think about this exploration of freedom, responsibility, and consultation and the reclamation of words. You know how it goes. Until next time, I wish you the best for playing your unique part, and you have it, in making this world a better place. Catch you next time.